This is a National Museum of Australia recording. For more information, visit nma.gov.au/audio.
Good evening and welcome, ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys. Welcome to our distinguished guest this evening. I won't name you all because I'm probably going to miss some of you, but I'd like to make a special welcome indeed to our guests, Gail Mabo, our panel this evening, Dr. Tom Kalmer, co-chair of Reconciliation Australia, Ms. Leah Armstrong, CEO of Reconciliation Australia, and Mr. Rod Little, chairperson of the ACT Indigenous Elected Body and director of the National Congress of Australia's First Peoples. I acknowledge the traditional owners of this country and pay respects to your ancestors. I acknowledge the other Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people here this evening and pay respects to your ancestors as well. Thank you for joining us this evening to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Mabo decision. I'm Samantha Faulkner, Director of the ACT Torres Strait Islands Corporation and your MC for this evening. Tonight we are honoured to hear from Gail Mabo, who will share her personal story about her father and his significance to his family. We're also very lucky to have our three Indigenous leaders tonight who will join us in a short panel discussion, reflecting on the last 20 years and also thinking ahead and sharing about what their future wishes are as well. And after that, I'd like to ask you to join us for refreshments and to have a chat with the panel. Firstly, I'd like to welcome Auntie Agnes to the stage and give her welcome to country. Thank you, Auntie Agnes.
Nice and bright. Good evening, everyone. Nice to see you all. One of Canberra's fresh evenings. But I'm very proud and honoured to be here this evening to welcome you to the land of our country, of our Ngunnawal people. Firstly, I'd like to start off by acknowledging Minister Jenny Mackle, Minister Chris Burke, Gail Mabo, Tom Kalman, other distinguished guests, ladies and gentlemen. And I also extend that welcome to all of our other Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island friends who have joined us here this evening. And a special welcome to all elders, regardless of your cultures. And there are other Indigenous and non-Indigenous peoples from many nations around the country and the world who have come to live on the Ngunnawal land, and I would like to acknowledge and pay my respects to them also, especially those who have joined us here this evening. In this National Reconciliation Week, the theme is Let's Talk Recognition. This focus on how Australians can better recognise each other and recognise the contribution, cultures and histories of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island people. We all know the importance of recognition and how good it makes us feel. National Recognition, Reconciliation Week, is the perfect opportunity to recognise all Australians and the new unique place of Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island peoples within this country. The 3rd of June is Mabo Day, is celebrated each year by Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island peoples. It recognises the efforts that Eddie Mabo and the other Torres Strait Island people achieved 20 years ago at the High Court of Australia. Their victory is a victory for us all. This decision recognises that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Island people have a great relationship to the land that exists prior to colonisation and still exists today. This recognition paved the way for land rights called native title. It is lovely to join you this evening to celebrate this momentous occasion. Canberra is a special place, and my wishes is for you to do and enjoy good while you are here. And so, once again, on behalf of my daughter and myself, thank you for having us. And now I'd just like to finish like I normally do, in the words of the Ngunnawal people, Nagana Yarrabai Yangu, which means, you're welcome to leave your footprints on our land now. Or in other words, welcome to Ngunnawal country. Please enjoy the rest of the evening. Thank you all.
Thank you, Auntie Agnes. I'd also like to acknowledge my fellow directors of the corporation here this evening. Masipa Banu, our chairperson, if Masipa's here. Daniel Morsu, our deputy chairperson, and Fiona Peterson, our secretary, who can't be with us this evening. And also acknowledge Lydia George, our director, here this evening as well. The ACT Torres Strait Islanders Corporation was founded in 1996, and its objectives are to promote and encourage the Torres Strait Islander heritage and culture to the members of the corporation and maintain the objects of the corporation through economic, social and educational activities. And our membership is open to all Torres Strait Islander and Aboriginal people who live in the Canberra region. And I think we've currently just opened that up to all supporters as well too. So I welcome you to join and be a member or an associate member as well. I'd ask you all to pause for a moment as well too. As in our custom, we also like to pause for a minute silence just to remember those who can't be with us this evening. And in particular, just to stop for a moment to reflect in particular of one of our elders who passed away recently, who has also been a voice for the Torres Strait and for our people as well. So if I can just ask you to bow your heads and just pause for a moment. Thank you. Thank you for that moment. I'd like to now invite Minister Jenny Macklin to the stage, and she would just like to say a few words. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much, Sam, for welcoming us all here tonight. And if I could first of all say a very big thank you to Auntie Agnes for what is always a lovely, warm welcome to country. We acknowledge you. We acknowledge all the other elders who are with us here tonight. We do recognise your place and the importance of acknowledgement of country, and we also acknowledge and pay our respects to your ancestors. Thank you very much for having us. I do want to also acknowledge all of my parliamentary colleagues who are with us here tonight, both from the ACT Parliament and those of you who've been able to come down from Parliament House. I think I can't see anyone now, but those of you who are here, thank you very much for joining us all. It is a very, very special occasion. I do want to also thank the museum very much for having us here tonight. It is a very special time in our history and one that we're all pleased to mark together. It is time for us to recognise the extraordinary achievements of Eddie Kohaki Mabo and to recognise the work of those many, many people who went before him, who were part of the struggle for land rights in this country. Gail Mabo, like her father, has a role in that story, and we're so thrilled to have you here, Gail, with us tonight, to both honour your father and, I'm sure you won't mind me saying, also your mother, who is a wonderful woman. It's true that Gail's father, of course, was an extraordinary leader, and she will talk to us about that tonight. But we are, I think, able to also acknowledge Gail's role herself. Of course, she grew up as a child surrounded by a wonderful family and I'm sure was immersed in all of the debates and discussions in her home about the importance of this struggle. But she now, as a woman, continues the task of reconciliation, continues to make sure that everything we do in this country is about building the strength of purpose of Torres Strait Islander peoples, Aboriginal peoples around Australia. And we honour you here tonight, Gail, and thank you very, very much for being with us. The story of your father, of course, is a story that has been replicated over thousands and thousands of years of peoples who have cared for their land. And I'm so thrilled to have the opportunity of welcoming you here tonight, Gail Mabo.
Thank you very much, Minister Macklin, for that wonderful welcome. And thank you, Auntie, for that welcome to country. It's a little bit strange because this is my first ever speaking engagement to speak about my father. I've always been the one that, you know, is off doing other things. And so I'm actually honoured to be here tonight to represent our family and to speak to you about who my dad was. And he was a man who was driven by his culture. He was passionate to the point that if we were somewhere and if it doesn't matter who it was, if there was an elderly person in the room, he'd make us all get up and get out of the road to let them sit down, whether it be black, white or whatever. And it was that thing of instilling those sort of values to us that, you know, that helped us become the people we are. And it's that thing of, like, I do that with my children and hopefully they'll do it with their children. But it's only through recognition of peoples as peoples that we can go forward and reconcile. Because what Dad has done is just open the door to say that, you know, as Indigenous people of this country, we were the first peoples here, but we embrace everybody who else has come to this country. And now everyone who is here has to embrace, you know, everyone who is around them. And it's that thing of, I always say to my children that when they come home and they're whinging about having an argument with a child at school, I always say to them, do you know who that child is? Do you know what that child's name is? Don't tell me what colour they are. Just tell me if you know their name. Because, you know, at the end of the day, it doesn't matter what colour the child was, who they had an argument with. That child is someone. And if they don't know anything about that child, they have to make a point of knowing who they're talking about. Because it's that thing of, like, well, maybe one day we'll invite that child to our house to show them who you are. Because if you don't start introducing and opening your doors, how are children going to learn? And as a cultural advisor, I go out and I speak to a lot of children, and I always say to them, because whenever I turn up to an event, I'm usually singing and dancing and doing traditional dances, all the dances my dad taught me. And with that, I always say, well, I introduce myself as Aunty Gail, because there's a lot of kids who have come from broken homes or families who don't have extended family. So I always make them say that I'm Auntie Gail, because then they feel comfortable with you. Because if you don't make them feel comfortable, they won't want to learn. And once you break that barrier of them relaxing with you, they become sponges. And by the end of the day, they're singing all my songs and doing all my dances. And then it's that thing of, like, they've learnt something, and they'll go home and they'll talk about the Auntie Gail, and their mothers and fathers will go, who? And then it becomes a point of discussion, because then they'll talk about the songs and dances and where they come from. So they're educators in their own right. And so we have to start with little people, because they're the next generation. Thank you.
Yeso to Gail, and thank you for that. I'd like to now welcome our panel to the stage, Leah Armstrong, Tom Kalmer, and Rod Little. If you'd like to join me in these lovely red seats up here. I'll just quickly introduce everybody, because I know you didn't come here to listen to me speak, but these three lovely people. Rod Little is the chair of the ACT Indigenous Elected Body, Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander Elected Body here in the ACT. Leah Armstrong, the CEO of Reconciliation Australia, and Dr. Tom Kalmer, the co-chairperson of Reconciliation Australia. And with all their life experience and positions as well too, I'd just like to invite them to comment on the past 20 years and go from there. Thank you.
So you got the microphone.
So the ladies first. Thank you very much, Samantha, for that introduction, and thank you also to Annie Agnes for welcoming us this evening, and acknowledging also to Jenny Macklin and the other parliamentarians here tonight. I guess my reflections and certainly why it's important that why we're gathered here tonight is to recognise the great achievements that Eddie Koikumabo has achieved, and certainly I actually think of, when I sort of think about it in terms of, the power of how one man with such courage and commitment and with truth on his side can achieve great things. And, when I think of, his achievements, that's what I think of, how, a single individual can, really make a significant change. And certainly, I grew up in Mackay in Queensland, and I was, had very proud and strong Torres Strait Islander culture as I was growing up. But growing up in Mackay also, we also celebrated, as Gail has mentioned, other cultures. And throughout my family, there's a lot of other cultures as well. We have Malay, Japanese and Indian. And at events and celebrations, we would not only have Torres Strait Islander dancing, but we would have Malay dancing, we would have celebrations of all of that. And on moving to Newcastle in the late 1980s, I was quite, shocked and surprised in that time that in conversations with the broader Newcastle community, they had no recognition of the Torres Strait Islands. There was very little recognition, and what was more shocking was very little recognition of the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander community, or the Aboriginal community in Newcastle. So what I see is that, what has happened in 1992, that the Mabo decision has actually, brought that to effect and really sort of made people aware and created the awareness and started a national conversation about recognition.
First of all, can I acknowledge Annie and Agnes? Thank you for your warm welcome, as always. Acknowledgement, Minister McGlynn. Gail, thank you very much for those kind words and memories of your father. And can I say welcome to all of our brothers and sisters here tonight. What a decision that was. For me personally, it was a sense of hope for me, and it was a turning point for my father to pursue an application for under native title. It was one of those moments of hope, and it was a gratitude for me personally to Gail's father and many other people and leaders that participated in that process. But it also raised quite a bit of anxiety across the broader public, Australian public. For me, it was one of those moments where that I thought there is hope for us as First Peoples of this country to be recognised and to participate in a society as equals. But I guess over the last, reflecting on those 20 years, it really doesn't seem to be that way, and it really hasn't turned out like I expected at that time. At that time, that influenced my decision to join the public service and participate in policy development and decision-making that I thought I was able to influence and really bring forth some of those changes, not only for my people back home from Western Australia, but for peoples right across the country, our mob, in whatever circumstances. So for me, it also was, up until now, I guess, a reflection on how difficult it was to demonstrate to people one of what the truth of the matter is in this country, is that, yes, we were traditional owners. We were owners of these lands before anybody else set foot in these lands. And that should be recognised, that should be respected and valued. And I felt that being a Stolen Generations member myself was that, hang on a second, you know, these sorts of things shouldn't happen. And we're still struggling. But the other really positive things from that decision and many, many other decisions and actions that people have taken is one of great admiration and great respect for people who will stand up and will articulate and who will take up the fight and the challenge that's placed before them to do the right thing. And that is often a struggle, and that takes a toll on your life and on your families. So we are very grateful for that decision and what a decision it was, and we still are living in hope. Thank you.
Thanks, Rod. Ali Agnes, Jenny, Senators, Chris Burke, and Torres Strait Islander brothers and sisters and our Aboriginal friends and brothers and sisters as well. And, you know, I think today is a great, great showing of what reconciliation is all about. A mix of people who are out here to really build on what we're trying to achieve through Reconciliation Australia, and that is to share knowledge, to get a better understanding about Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander history and culture, and to be able to reflect on the past, but also to look at what's currently happening and where we go to into the future. So thank you all for your participation. My first recollections of Eddie Mabo were back in the 80s, before there was a discussion of land rights. It was when he was in education and when we were working on the development of the National Aboriginal Education Policy, and Eddie was very, very fiery, and he was loud, and he wanted to get his views across about education and about participation, but mainly about culture and trying to make the education system very appropriate to everybody that participates, because there's a very strong belief by many of us that if we can make education attractive, people will attend. And you make it attractive by making sure that you respect culture, you respect language, and we start to get people to participate in something they're comfortable with, and formal education, Western education, will come after that. And that's why there's a strong move by Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people across the nation, and well supported by others, to look at supporting bilingual education. That was my first experience of Eddie Mabo, and he was very loud and made sure his voice was heard by all. But in more recent times, and he'd passed at this time when I visited Murray Island and went and visited his gravesite, but you really get a feel of what Native Title was all about and what his claims were all about. When you go to a place like Mur, you can see the fish traps that are underwater, you can see the culture that was there, you understand about how the division of country existed from amongst the people, where culture still existed, as it does across mainland Australia. People still practice. But, you know, one of the sad things is that we do it innately as Aboriginal Torres Strait Islander people when we identify relationships between people, when we can talk about country. We don't think about it in the sense of having to then justify it to somebody about making a land claim or a native title claim. And so there's a different way that we see land ownership and title to land versus how the Western legal system sees it. So that throws up a whole range of challenges. But that said, you know, as of last month, we had over 620 native title claims in existence. There's been 175 determinations made, and of those, you know, the majority have been consent determinations. They haven't meant that Aboriginal people get access to everything, but we do have some rights over the land and access rights generally, but not full determination or control of the land. And that's something that we have to look at. And whilst it can be said that, yes, 15 to 16% of the Australian land mass is covered by a native title determination, you know, people need to understand that that doesn't mean that we control the land. We share it with non-Indigenous Australians in many cases, and it also means that it's only the land that is claimable, that some other title is not over it, that we can claim. And so it's not about taking land off people. It's about recognising who the ownership is. And for us, in many instances, it's the importance of being recognised as the traditional owners of the land that's most important. Most important for our mental health, for our well-being, you know, and very often for our physical health as well. And so we've got to get back to, and I think a lot of the issues that confront many Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people across the nation will be addressed when we start to get, you know, full control of our lives and have a better say over our lives, instead of you know, that being determined by other parties. And that's what all the major reports are telling governments, and we're talking, you know, not only the current government but past governments. And you take the Department of Finance Review of Indigenous Expenditure, talks about the past 40 years have not worked in relation to Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander policy, because it's been a top-down imposition. We have to get to the situation where we respect Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people as being here, as the First Peoples, and that's where we move into recognition through the Constitution, and that's our next big challenge. And I'm sure Leah will talk about that as we go along. You know, otherwise, I'll hog the show. Thank you.
Don't want that, Tom. Yes. Thank you. A range of issues there too. You covered a range of issues.
Thank you for those opening comments. You've certainly touched on a number of areas there with the truth of the matter and stating the true contribution that Eddie Mabo gave, and touching on areas of health and education. But I'd like to move forward to another 20 years. Where do you, as individuals, with your experience, where do you see yourselves in 20 years' time with this? But also, where do you see Australia in 20 years' time with reconciliation, and commenting on those areas of health and education? Is that the key? And what's the role for all Australians in this, including constitutional change?
I'll go first. I think the biggest challenge that we have is to address health and then look at the determinants of health, housing, employment, education, and so forth. And unless we have, you know, good health, I won't be around in 20 years' time. And, you know, if you think that, You know, the average life expectancy of an Aboriginal or Torres Strait Islander person is only in the early 60s. You know, that doesn't give a lot of time left for many of us who are in our 60s. Getting close to that, not 60 yet, but getting close to that. And if we want to enjoy the same life expectancy as non-Indigenous Australians, we need to keep on going along the path that's already been set through the Close the Gap campaign and the government's and the opposition's response to the Close the Gap campaign through the statement of intent, where it's a bipartisan agreement, where it's a multi-party agreement, actually, supported by all parties. We need to be steadfast in that and to make sure that the goal of health equality by 2030 is achieved as we've all agreed to.
Yes, certainly. Well, I hope it doesn't actually take 20 years to get constitutional recognition, and that certainly is an area where we have a real unique opportunity now as a nation to address the unfinished business of recognising Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in our constitution. And, you know, it's something that since the 1967 referendum, as we all know, is the most successful referendum that we have had, where the nation did come together in a united voice to, you know, address the, you know, the issue of, you know, Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people in the census. And, you know, but there is still some elements of discrimination that remain in our constitution, and Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people aren't recognised. They're invisible in our constitution. And recognition, as we all know, has a real impact on us as individuals, on us as communities, and on us as a nation. And I think, you know, this is something that we should all sort of think about what recognition does mean to us. You know, it certainly has an effect, as Tom talked about, the health issues. You know, it has an effect on how we, you know, feel as valued members of society that, you know, can help us with our, you know, the way our confidence and our communities can grow. And certainly, you know, we've been tasked for Reconciliation Australia to generate broad public support and awareness around the importance of constitutional recognition, and the government has given us the opportunity that we see now to really sort of, you know, settle this unfinished business of recognition in the constitution. But for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people, this is very important. But we're only 3% of the population. For us to have a successful referendum succeed, it will take the other 97%. So we're really, you know, it's a call to action to everybody now to not wait 20 more years, to take advantage of this unique opportunity to get Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people recognised in our constitution.
Well, I guess in 20 years' time, I would like to... It would not be unreasonable to expect that Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples would enjoy the same quality of life as anybody else that lives in this country. That's the challenge, I think, building on what Tom and Leah have said. To have a standard of health to be valued for your contributions, for you being the first peoples of this country, but also to have equal rights to access services that can contribute to your better health, the share in the economy, to raise your families without any fear of discrimination. I think that the first thing before the constitutional reform would be that the government embraces and begins to work with Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people and all Australians to implement the UN Declaration of the Rights of Indigenous Peoples. And I think that's the first part, to start to instill the pride that I think Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples deserve to be valued and recognise our ownership. That's a starting point. Then we move to the recognition constitution, and that's another deservedly placed for our peoples to be recognised. So once anyone in this room would say that I feel valued, I feel important, you feel good about yourself, And if you have a place in this society, you feel good about that. That's the first point. So then all of the other things will start to flow, in my view. I think that in 20 years, I would hope that my grandchildren, my great-grandchildren, yes, believe me, I will have some great-grandchildren in 20 years' time, is that they are able to enjoy life without having to identify who they are. They enjoy, they know where they come from, they know where their cultural background is, and they really feel pride in themselves and who they are and who they represent. I think that's going to be a key. So it really has to start with humanity, your feelings about how good you are, and your respect that comes from other people. I think that's going to be a start. And that doesn't cost a lot of money. Valuing and respecting people doesn't cost.
Thanks for that, Ron. I'd just like to ask the panel members also if they'd just like to have any closing remarks, just reflecting on that, because I think you certainly covered a range of issues there, and I guess it's up to the audience. While it's not a question and answer time right now, just to reflect on what you've said and consider roles and the call for action as well too, and invite the audience to approach you with any questions later. But I'd like you to join with me in thanking the panel members now. Thank you.
The National Museum of Australia in Canberra explores what it means to be Australian through our permanent galleries, exhibitions, public programs, and the National Historical Collection. Find out more about the museum at nma.gov.au or download more audio programs from nma.gov.au/audio.